This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been online now for more than a decade, writing about the digital signage industry and filtering all the BS. Now 69 is also a podcast, a chance to talk to smart people doing interesting things in this business. You can listen to episodes online, grab it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to grab the RSS feed. 69 is gratefully sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Software and display companies get a lot of attention in the digital signage industry, but projects don't happen without the gear that holds screens in place and keeps them protected. I traveled up to St. Jacobs, Ontario, just outside the Canadian tech hotbed of Kitchener-Waterloo, to speak with Ilesh Garan, one of the two co-founders of Armadillo, which has built up a thriving little business making enclosures and stands from what you might call one-to-one digital signage. Garan is an industrial designer first, and you can see it in the curves, material choices, colors and functionality of Armadillo's products. They're anything but tablets just protected by a bit of metal or plastic. Armed with not much more than an idea and some reference samples, they booked a big exhibitor trade show when they were starting up and hoped they'd see some interest there. They ended up being swarmed at their little booth and left the show with one of the event's big awards. The company has seen steady growth in the last 4 years and had to relocate this year to a new facility, but they're already wondering if it's going to be big enough. Garant talks about how tablets are being used for interactive digital signage in a bunch of interesting ways. And he also goes into both the opportunities and the challenges. So we're up here in St. Jacobs, Ontario. Tell me about your company.
So we're Armadillo Display Solutions, and we manufacture and design and manufacture tablet display stands, kiosks, and enclosures for all kinds of different markets.
When did you get started?
We started just over 5 years ago.
And what got you into this? Like this is not something where you would look at another company and say, oh yeah, I want to do that too. You had to come up with this.
Yeah, for sure. It was honestly an accident. My background is in graphic design, so I did a lot of brand work, packaging design. We typically, when we get a project, like a trade show booth design, for example, we'll work with the clients to source all kinds of different products that go into the design. So we'll start with the design concepts, we'll flesh that out, and then we present everything along with pricing and say, you know, you need this in your booth, we need this and that. We actually had a client come to us and say, hey, look, I'm looking to use tablets in my booth, but I have very strict requirements for these tablets. I need to be able to use them three different ways. So I need to be able to use them freestanding, I need to be able to wall mount them, or I need to be able to put them on a desktop, depending on which trade show I go to, because some of their booths were 20 by 20 large booths, so they wanted freestanding, and then they had some smaller booths where they wanted wall or counter mount. So we said, that's fine, it should be no problem at all. So of course, we were pretty naive back then, so we just went out and looked all over the web and talked to local suppliers and said, look, this is what we're trying to do. And they all just looked at us with blank stares and never really heard of something like this before. We did find some stuff online that was kind of your kind of cobbled together in the basement type looking products. So I said, you know, like that's not going to do for this client. So we designed a mock-up in 3D of some tablet enclosures or stands that functioned in that way.
Right.
Presented it to the client. Obviously, the client loved them. So the next problem we had is, great, how do we make that? So we're sitting here with a design product on paper, looks fabulous, client loves it, but we can't make it. So we actually had access to a CNC machinist, and we took the 3D prototyped models, and we made three of them, sold two to the client, and then from there, kind of just, it's gone.
And this is pre this company, or how did you start?
Yeah, so this is pre this company. So this was when I used to have my design studio.
Okay.
And then from there, we kept one of those prototypes, and my wife, who's also an owner in the company, said, hey, you know, if this client likes that idea, let's see if somebody else might like it. So it just kind of happened that way. There wasn't really a lot of other thought put into it, honestly, at that point. It was just a need. There was a need in the marketplace. It was a small need at the time, but there was a need. And from there, we took a pretty big chance. We did our first trade show in Las Vegas at Exhibitor. My wife and I had never been to a trade show before. Didn't know what to expect, but she convinced me that this was a good idea. So we ordered 10 more products, went to the show, and it's been great ever since. So
wow. Yeah. And at that point, you decided to start Armadillo formally?
Yeah, at that point, I mean, we because of my background, we branded the company, we designed the website, we did all of the literature around it. It was very easy to do because
something at this trade show.
For sure. Yeah. So we kind of built it around that. And the trade show was a huge success. We actually won what they have a Buyer's Choice Award every year. We won that at the show, which was fantastic.
So that was your first clue this worked out?
It was our first clue. It was also the fact that when we got there, for the 3 days that the show went on, we were two rows deep of people at any given point that we needed to talk to because everybody was so interested in this product for their shows. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and from there, I still ran my design studio for about a year after that while I was running this business as well. Mm-hmm. So I would run my design studio during the day, take phone calls and orders during the day, and then my wife and I would pack the products at night out of our basement. Okay. And then, yeah, we moved in.
This is 2013?
This was, yeah, we started late 2011 into 2012. So yeah, 2012 was kind of that year of transition for us.
So still a very young company.
Oh yeah, very young in the industry overall, yeah.
And you were two people then, obviously. How many are you at now?
There's 10 of us full-time now.
Okay. And you moved into this facility where we're sitting, you said about a year?
It was about a year ago, yeah. It was last November. Yeah.
And right now you can pretty much take an idea. Like if a client comes to you and says, I have a tablet that I want to use for X. Mm-hmm. I need it to be protected and enclosed. You can take it all the way through to like delivery.
For sure.
Everything in-house.
So the way our company basically runs is we produce designs for these enclosures or stands, mm-hmm. and then those are kind of off-the-shelf products that we have. I think there's about 9 or 10 of them right now. We don't do a lot of custom design work,
okay.
but we do add-ons and we
variations on your standard line.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So we do a lot of that, and that's mm-hmm. been building ever since. It's getting actually, I would say that 95% of all the enclosures that leave here have some sort of customization done to them.
Yeah. And did you know much at all about the digital signage business or that there was an industry out there for this when you got into it?
Not really.
Yeah.
No, it was kind of a big surprise to us. Even when we started, I mean, for the first 2 years, we really focused on trade show and events. Mm-hmm. That was our bread and butter because the product we had was that 3-in-1 solution. We didn't have any of the other lines that we currently have. Mm-hmm. So we really focused on that. And until we were kind of in the business for 2 to 3 years and we started to recognize that this industry was growing rapidly mm-hmm. into all these other vertical markets, that we really started to see a push for it. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because when we started, there was a lot of interest in the products, I think on a retail level and in those other markets, but it was very pilot driven. So we had a lot of people kind of just poking at the idea, seeing where they could use this type of solution. Digital signage as a whole, I think, has primarily been focused on larger screens, larger screen deployments. We're doing something a little bit different where we call it more personalized digital signage. I mean, you're using a tablet to create digital signage, or we call it a touch point for a brand, you know, an interactive point. A lot of people weren't even sure that this would make a go or succeed in this industry. I remember reading on a lot of blogs early on that tablets are a fad, they're never going to be useful in digital signage, they're not robust enough. But I think that viewpoint has changed quite dramatically since then.
But there was also a reason for that in that initially there were lots of folks just buying iPads or Android tablets or whatever and not even really protecting them or anything else and just saying we're going to put these in all our stores or our branches or whatever it may be. And then discovering that they got tampered with, that they got broken, that they got taken away and everything else. So that's really kind of the void that you guys started to fill, right?
Yeah, it is. And we still, to this day, have clients that are still going through the same problem. They don't realize that's going to be a problem until they do a rollout mm-hmm. and then realize, hey, we should have enclosed those completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there is that. I think there's also a need for smaller digital signage out there.
Yeah.
Everyone's focused on the large stuff, and that's great. I think they're fantastic, some of the deployments I've seen in some of the projects. But there's also the one-on-one digital space that's, I think, really, you know, from sign-in to boardroom booking to, you know, all kinds of little things that you can do at trade shows and events that are very important for the industry as a whole. Mm-hmm.
Now you're a designer and you know, stuff I see from your company is, you know, very nicely designed and everything else. It's attractive. It would look good in a retail environment. But are your buyers coming to you out of design or are they coming to you because they need to protect these displays and they need to secure them?
I think it's a bit of both. I think naturally we all like a well-designed product. Whether we want to pay for it or not is a different question mm-hmm. altogether. But I think intuitively we all know what a nice product is and we all gravitate towards well-designed things. So I think there's definitely that. I think there's also the security and the enclosure aspect of it. There's lots of other people doing that as well. So I think it's the innovative part of it. It's the customization that we offer. It's a whole bunch of things.
And the description of well-designed, you're taking that well beyond the idea of it just being pretty. You're talking about well-engineered.
I think I think design is a combination of many things. Mm-hmm. I think it's the aesthetics of an object, but I think it's also the usability. I think usability is huge. And also, how robust is that product going to be? We've heard from some retail clients that say it's over-engineered. Mm-hmm. You know, we only have a life expectancy for this product of 18 months, and beyond that, we expect to replace it. So we're not willing to pay for a product that's made better because we're just going to throw it away. We don't believe in that. We don't believe in that mentality. We design products that should withstand, you know, a lifetime of use.
So you're not trying to compete with stuff that I assume could come over by the container load from Shenzhen or some other place in China or another country?
No, not at all. No, we design our products to, I guess, we take it to the next level. There's some examples I have from other companies that do the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. For example, we use machine screws on all of our enclosures. Some people use self-tapping screws, which are great for, you know, two or three time use, but if you use it 100 times, it's gonna strip, fall apart. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna last. We do a very unique feature in ours that we call tablet fit kits. So basically you buy an enclosure for a medium-sized 10-inch tablet, mm-hmm. and it comes with four-corner inserts in a frame that are replaceable. So if you own, for example, one of our Sphere products, you buy it for an iPad today, and in 2 years down the road, you want to switch to a Samsung Galaxy Tab A 10.1-inch, you can easily do that by just simply swapping out that fit kit. You don't have to buy a brand new unit. Mm-hmm. What our clients really like on the retail side of that is if they deploy, let's say, 500 of one tablet, and then they have to switch 250 of them out for a different tablet. At the end of the day, you don't even know the difference. The end user doesn't know there's a different tablet within that enclosure. Mm-hmm. So you're not buying different enclosures for different tablets.
So that took experience to figure that out? Or hard-won experience?
For the client or for us?
For you guys.
No, we actually designed our products from the get-go to do that.
Okay.
I don't know why we did that. I think it was just an intuitive thing that we did when we designed. Mm-hmm. That we said, hey, like how... Because when we started, we had to fit an iPad 1, one of the Samsung devices, I think, and a BlackBerry of all things. So right away,
the playbook.
which we haven't really sold any of, but.
Mm-hmm. Which is just down the road from here, right?
It is just down the road from us, yeah. So when we did that, we said, you know, the first instinct was, hey, how do we fit all three of these into the same enclosure? So it mm-hmm. wasn't about making three different products,
right. So you would have known, just like in the computer industry and in the display mount industry and everything else, the dimensions of these things are moving targets.
For sure. Yeah.
And has the marketplace shifted at all from when you started, where there's probably a huge infatuation with iPads and skepticism probably of the Android tablets? Has that shifted around, and what gets used more than anything else?
It has shifted. When we started, iPads were definitely a number one seller. It's a pretty even split right now. Mm-hmm. I would say it's pretty even between the Windows-based tablets, the Android, and the iOS-based devices. Yeah. What's interesting is when you have a lot of larger scale deployments, they tend to favor either the Samsung or the Microsoft devices, because there's a lot more programs that will obviously run on that, based on the platform.
Right.
The iOS devices we find are used more on smaller deployments, where there's more of a comfort level that's required with the device. Mm. Whereas if you're getting an Android device, you know, a lot of you can root it, and you have to do a lot more high-end tech stuff to make it actually work for what you need it to do.
And do you guys get involved in that at all, or you just kind of provide guidelines?
We provide guidelines. We don't get involved. We don't even sell the tablets with the displays. We mm-hmm. just sell the enclosures, the stands, and then kind of leave it up to the client. We will give advice as we go along, or if a client calls in and says, you know, I'm doing this and this and this, what's the best tablet? Mm-hmm. We can give some guidelines, but we definitely don't get involved in that.
And without going too far down that rabbit hole, I'm curious, what are some of those guidelines? Like, why would you choose an iPad versus a Windows tablet versus an Android tablet?
Again, it's based on what they're trying to do with the device. Uh-huh. If it is just a small company that's looking just to deploy something at a trade show and they need to run a very simple application, then we recommend an iOS device, because really at the end of the day, they're very simple to use. They last a long time. Battery life is very good. Mm-hmm. You don't have a lot of problems with them. When you get into some of the lower end Android devices, they're great for larger deployments because of the price point, but you also start to have more problems with them where you have to switch devices out if it's malfunctioning, and smaller places just can't afford or have the time to do that. So.
And do you counsel against, you could go on Alibaba and find a 10.1 inch Android tablet, I'm guessing for $80 if you, you know, went down a couple of screens or something.
Sure.
Do you counsel against staying away from that sort of stuff because you're gonna be in a world of pain?
We don't get too involved in that, I'll be honest. One of our biggest features is that we can fit basically any tablet into the device. So we have a lot of clients that will send us a very unique tablet. We do all the measurements and the CAD drawings, and we fit that device in and send that back with their order. Mm-hmm. I know some of our customer service reps will advise against that, depending on a larger deployment, because they'll, you know, it's a reliability issue.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I mean, you're placing your whole brand kind of value proposition on these devices, so it is important. But you know, some clients find that a price point is more important. So,
and when you ship, you don't do any consolidation and embed the displays in there when you ship, right?
It's interesting that you say that, because early on we didn't do any of that, and now kitting is actually becoming more of a program for us, where we have a lot more clients shipping us various, not only the tablets, but also peripherals that they want to integrate into the device, whether it's a card reader, a fingerprint scanner, or plugs, USB hubs, or anything like that. And
they want a finished unit that they can ship straight to site, plug in, and fire it up.
Yeah, not just straight. Yeah, and especially if they want to drop ship straight to their clients. A lot of clients are doing deployments or programs where we don't just ship it to their warehouse. We actually ship 10 of them to this location, 10 of them to that location. So they're basically all ready to go for the installers when they get there.
Does that put you more in the firing line, so to speak? Because you've integrated the tablet, they look at you more as, well, that damn thing doesn't work, as opposed to you just selling the enclosure.
It can go that way. The clients that we do that for, we have very strict conversations with them to let them know that that's not something we warrant.
Yeah.
Basically, the device you send us needs to be functional. We're not testing anything. We're just integrating the components and making sure everything's on a hardware, I guess, on an enclosure side of things, everything is technically there and installed the way it should be.
Right.
We don't fire up the devices, check that everything's working. That's up to the end users.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 69 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now, back to the podcast.
I don't follow the tablet marketplace closely enough to get a sense of whether more of them are shipping than were a year ago or whatever, but I certainly see way less marketing about tablets, and you see tablets being thrown in as open a bank account, we'll give you a tablet, that sort of thing. Have you seen a dip in activity at all, and interest in tablets for various purposes that you ship to?
No, we've actually seen an increase. Yeah. What's really neat about the industry now is that people have moved away from the pilot project stage. They're actually starting implementations. So in the last year and a half, we've really seen kind of a takeoff in that regard, where before we would ship, 10 units or something, now we're shipping hundreds of units to the same type of clients, and they're starting to do larger deployments.
So what are they being used for? I would assume retail, but when we were chatting before, you were saying retail, actually not so much.
Retail is doing them, there's no doubt about it. I think retail's still struggling to figure out how to use them properly.
Like everything else in digital science.
Exactly, and where to use them so that they're actually used.
Yeah.
Our marketplaces that we find very interesting are education. We have a lot of schools, ton of universities, libraries.
And how do they use them in education?
So for instance, in libraries, they're replacing a lot of the old computer systems that you used to see in the children's areas for gaming. So they use some of our products, like our Sphere and our Spot product, to put in those spaces so the kids can engage with that instead. A lot more cost effective, a lot more robust.
No keyboards and mouses to break.
Exactly, yeah. A lot more colorful, I think, with some of our products. We're also seeing, we have a university in the States that used some of our kiosks for direct feedback. So they're putting them all around the campus, and they're getting student feedback, and then they're actually enacting some of that almost immediately. So instead of going through a board or a Dropbox type system where they're getting feedback, mm-hmm. they're doing digitally, collecting that data digitally, and then enacting on it almost immediately. So for example, there was, I think, one of the classrooms was lacking in seating or something like that, and I think they had 20 or 30 people submit feedback in that regard, so they just added more chairs to the classroom. It seems right. like a very simple thing, but by doing it digitally, you get that instant feedback loop, and I think it's been working really well.
Mm-hmm. We've seen the point of sale system business start to evolve and see iPads and other tablets being used as POS systems. Do you see a broader industry emerging where self-service is moving away from, you know, ATM-like kiosks to tablet-like devices that have the horsepower and everything to do what you need to do for like hotel check-ins and all kinds of things?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. We have clients already doing a lot of those deployments. I think it'll just take time to figure out on both the security side and the tampering side what they can deploy and what they can't deploy. Mm-hmm. We have, for example, we have clients call us and say, hey, can I put this into a subway station, you know, in the New York subway? And we joke around with them. We say, sure, you can put it there, but it might not be there in about 4 minutes' time. So I think it's just a matter of picking the right applications for the technology. You know, these aren't going to solve every problem out there. I think they're unique in some situations. But I think there's other kiosks or other digital touch points that will fill that gap. Mm-hmm. So there's no doubt, I think, that digital will take over a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Whether it's going to be tablets or another technology, I'm not sure yet. But yeah, we are definitely seeing a huge uptake on that. We have clients that are doing, for example, lobby security. So you could go into a hotel or an apartment building and check yourself in mm-hmm. that regard. So for sure.
And how do they deal with the security end of that? There's no longer a human there sort of looking at the person and saying, well, you're a little dodgy, I need to ask you more questions, versus just they're checking in.
Yeah, I think what ends up happening, and I'm not too knowledgeable on this because we don't get too involved in it, is that they change the way that we interact with the devices. Mm-hmm. So now when you come up to a counter, you have to maybe you have to punch in a security ID that you got from someone that emailed you or phoned mm-hmm. you to show up at that place.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying when we did a little tour that the interesting thing about your business is because you work through partners, you don't actually get to talk to the end users all that much about what really drives their interest.
Yeah, that's right. So we work through a lot of different partners, primarily design agencies. That's mm-hmm. our biggest partner group, and software developers. Mm-hmm. So they work with the end customers. It's nice in one regard because we don't get too bogged down on the meetings and all the technical side of things
right.
to make the projects happen. The downside of that is we don't get a lot of the feedback that happens on that mm-hmm. side as well. So,
is there a product that you've tried that just hasn't really taken off the way you thought it would? Or vertical markets?
I think retail is the one that a lot of people in the industry really had high hopes for mm-hmm. and a lot of people are banking on. For us, we find it's not taken off as quickly as we thought it would have. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of red tape in retail. There's not a lot of money to deploy some of the proper solutions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, it's, I don't know if I want to say it, but a lot of the guys that we've talked to almost want to take shortcuts to get mm-hmm. the projects deployed, which we don't believe in. So there's no way we'll ever get our price point for our products low enough to do a lot of these larger scale deployments. Mm-hmm. And right now that's fine with us.
And this whole business of, they only need for 18 months or whatever, they're just willing to take the risk that stuff may not last even 18 days.
Yeah, that's for us, that's just not the mentality that we base the business on. I think mm-hmm. we're here to make high quality products that last. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when you have a meeting and they tell you that the products are over-engineered, they're gonna last much longer than the life cycle they're planning on them to last. You know, what do you say? Do you say, I'm going to make a crappier product because that's what this client wants?
Yeah.
That's not how we want to run our business. So.
Yeah, and I guess you get that signal pretty quickly. This is a company we'll be able to work with versus one that's just like, forget it.
Sure, and that's absolutely fine. You know, there's all kinds of needs in the industry. There's all kinds of price points. There's all kinds of deployments that need to happen. Mm-hmm. I think you just find the right clients for the business that you're running.
Mm-hmm. Is there mechanical work that you have to do as well? You know, I would imagine to an outsider they would look at your product at a trade show and go, well, that's very nice looking and everything. It's an enclosure and that's about it. But there's a lot more engineering involved, right?
There is, surprisingly, yeah. When we started, we were a little naive. So we've made our first products out of metal. Mm-hmm. And we put the tablets in, we didn't think much of it. And then one day we thought, hey, why is the Wi-Fi strength so low on these? Part of it, we created a Faraday cage in which, you know, none of the Wi-Fi signals would get in or out.
Yeah.
So there is some engineering that goes into it. I mean, this isn't rocket science, but at the end of the day, we develop products that do have to, you know, stand up to a lot of abuse.
Yeah.
A lot of our products are cycle tested. For example, our sphere, the top of the head tilts back and forth 90 degrees.
Yeah, I was wondering about it. It's got ball bearings in it or something? Big ball bearings?
It actually has the same torque inserts that are inside the laptop hinge on your monitor laptop.
Uh-huh.
And we actually sourced that from a company in the States, and they're actually rated for, I think, 50,000 cycles. Mm-hmm. And we've actually done a test on those there's two of them in each one. We engineer little contraptions to actually test that. So it ran for almost 4 weeks straight, back and forth, and we test, what does it sound like? You know, and we open that back up and see how much has it worn, how much of the plastic has worn away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't seem like a lot should go into them, but a lot does. And I think that's because we do worry about how long will this last? And if I bought that product, if I had to buy that product, what would I expect from that product?
Mm-hmm. So. I just wrote the other day about a software company that I discovered had a clone of their website in China. Have you seen product online on Alibaba or whatever that you looked at and thought, that looks familiar?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. When we designed our products, we actually put design patents on pretty much all of them. And when we launched our 3-in-1 unit at the first trade show, the exhibitor trade show that we won the award for, when we came in the following year, there was another trade show competitor, a huge company, and I won't name them, but had a 40 by 40 foot booth, and we walked by the booth and they had basically our 3-in-1 product completely identical. So we actually had to send a cease and desist through the lawyers and stop them from doing that. They pulled the product back pretty quick. But same with our sphere product, we see some of those coming out of China already. They're very similar. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say they're exact, and I'm not sure anyone would actually fall for it. But yeah, there's no doubt that there's copycats left, right, and center. So,
but at that point, you're generally buying something that looks very nice, but doesn't have any of the engineering thought behind it, and certainly hasn't gone through, you know, the cycle testing and any of those things.
Right, and it's interesting because even some of the products that come out of there, something as simple as where do I run the cable? Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get a product that comes from overseas, and you'll see it put together, and then the cable actually comes out of the housing. Has to do kind of a side loop and then back into the tube again. Mm-hmm. And if you actually turn or rotate it the way it's intended to do, the cable would snap. Yeah. So I mean, and I don't think a lot of the clients that we deal with would fall for that kind of thing anyway. I know we've heard various times where people have tried different products before they ended up buying ours and said, look, we should have bought yours first because it is a little bit more money, but now we understand why.
Yeah.
So.
And is there a business in that sort of second wave of rollouts when they pilot something cheap and they realize, okay, I like the idea of this, but technically and cosmetically and reliably, this ain't the product. We need to find something better. Do you get those people?
Yeah, and I think that's where we're starting to get to now is we have people calling us and saying, look, like we did look at your stuff 2 years ago and it was higher priced and our IT department or our installers went with something else.
Yeah.
And I wish they wouldn't have. Yeah, so that is a new wave of business that is coming our way.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying that you consider yourself, and I don't mean this in a lofty kind of way, but like a premium product, and you're not interested even in getting to like big scale, like getting the 100,000 unit order.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we manufacture everything locally. So in Canada here, everything's manufactured within 10 kilometers of our main premises.
Mm-hmm.
We do that so that if anything goes wrong, I can drive down and, you know, give somebody crap for doing that, and we can get it fixed within a day or two. Mm-hmm. I don't want to run a business where I'm relying on the next container load of product that may or may not be good enough to sell to a client. And that puts us in a very interesting spot because we can either try to get the volumes up and then really have no margin at all on our products, or we can find a niche or a place in the market where clients respect the product quality and the service that we offer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we found that niche. We're working with some of the best clients in the world right now, and they're not doing huge deployments, but the deployments are large enough, and we're very happy with what we're doing.
You're just on the edges of kind of Canada's tech hub in Kitchener-Waterloo. Has that helped kind of tell the story when you're going around the world and saying, you know, we're based in a technology hub? We're not in a Mennonite village, even though you are.
Yeah. It's funny because it doesn't really seem to make much difference.
Okay.
We sell worldwide, so it hasn't had a major impact on what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's nice to have that around for the support and the community that it offers, but I don't think it's made a real big difference.
And having access to University of Waterloo and everything else, you know, granted you're not doing computer science stuff, but being in a city full of engineers and software people and everything else, has that helped?
It hasn't made much difference either. What's interesting is manufacturing in Canada is actually very hard.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of red tape that happens in Canada for good reasons, for health and safety reasons, but it also makes it a lot harder for us to run the company.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if we had introduced our own paint line this year, and to do that, we've done probably about 6 months worth of work in terms of legislation, in terms of making sure that we have the right paperwork in place, the right disposal methods in place, that a lot of companies overseas obviously don't have to adhere to.
Right.
So it makes life a lot harder. There's not as much support either on the manufacturing side in Canada as there is on the software side. As soon as you have a software product, everyone's kind of all over you to support that. On the hardware side, it's not quite like that. And I don't know if it's not quite as sexy for them as software or not.
Right.
But that's been a hurdle that we've kind of had to overcome.
But you're helped by the Canadian dollar right now, right?
That definitely does not hurt us.
Mm-hmm. When, are you selling in US dollars or selling in Canadian dollars?
We do both. So we sell in Canadian for our Canadian customers and US for the rest of the world. And we're also looking to introduce European pricing moving into 2017.
Okay. Yeah. So what does the next couple of years look like for you guys?
It's a good question. We've been so busy that we haven't had much time this year to do any future planning. I know that's really bad to say from a business perspective, but things have just been so busy this year, implementing new processes. We just moved into this new space that I haven't personally had enough time to sit back and see what's changed in the industry this year. If anything, I see things moving towards more of a bespoke model where clients are making more modifications and enhancing the tablet display systems that they are purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've set ourselves up in a way to offer that quickly and reliably.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the road between that and the kitting and packing really taking shape. We don't want to become a custom fab shop where we're actually just designing custom kiosks for people. I think that's very intensive and you need a lot more bandwidth than we currently have.
Yeah.
But I do see us creating more products where we see a need in the industry and then customizing them for clients as they need.
And you've seen pretty steady growth?
We have, yeah, year over year. Yeah, it's been good.
But you don't want to grow too much because you just moved into this place and you don't want to run out of space.
There's a delicate balance, I think, between growth and growing too fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to manage growth well, and that's been another hard part for us. We could have grown a lot faster, but we chose not to. Because I think when we get into the product rollouts, people may think, you know, it takes 2 months to get a product off, you know, from concept to completion out the door. It's more like 12 months, and that's even for simple products, because there is a lot of sourcing, testing, all the packaging stuff that goes into it. So yeah, it can take quite a while. And we've only been around 5 years. I mean, we have 10 product lines. We've done a lot in the 5 years, so.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.